John Molinaro Sportsnet. That's my favorite supporters group, John, just because of the name. It's such a great name. But tell me about this, and you know, the significance of what I think it's safe to say it was wide-ranging action, a wide range of action announced by Toronto FC, essentially making the supporters group personas non grata until they at least complete a code of conduct. Of course, this, you know, stuff like this wouldn't fly. Could you imagine, I don't know, Lazio fans having to do a code of conduct course before they could get into the stadium? That would not fly.
No, I suspect Lazio fans would riot over that. Yeah, I mean, it doesn't reflect all that well on the inebriati, because obviously, you know, for people who don't know, they have a long history of pretty intolerant behavior, whether it's chants or violence or, misogynist signs at games and stuff like that. So I think this was just, you know, the final straw that broke the camel's back in terms of, you know, setting off, you know, fire flares and whatnot, and then committing acts of violence in the game. And it wasn't even a home game. It was a road game in Ottawa during the Canadian Championship. So, you know, the fact that they had their privileges suspended, it's a pretty big deal. So, you know, they had to turn in their season tickets, and, you know, some members of the inebriati group were even banned outright from BMO Field and several MLSE facilities. So it's, it's a dark day for them. But, you know, considering, you know, their history of stupidity, it's probably the right decision. Not probably, it is the right decision by TFC to take this stern action.
Explain to some of our listeners who you know, probably maybe don't follow Toronto FC that much, just the whole culture of fan groups, because, you know, they're not fan clubs. Call
right.
them fan clubs. But explain the whole culture of it to us.
Yeah, so it's not uncommon for a lot of European clubs, you know, ranging in all types of size, to have supporter groups. And what they are essentially is just a group of supporters sitting in one sort of particular section of the stadium, and just, they're really loud and boisterous, and they organize, come up with songs and chants and bring in instruments and bang drums all day long, all game long. So it's just, they're really sort of the heart and soul of the fan base in many ways, because they have a large hand in sort of creating that great European like atmosphere that we come to recognize and love about European soccer. And for TFC, all those supporters groups, and there are many supporters groups too, that's the other thing. This isn't, we should point out, it's not all supporter groups have been banned, it's one. Mm-hmm. But they all congregate in the south end of, you know, BMO Field, and, you know, on any game day, the south end is just rocking because those fans are just so boisterous, and they're loud, and they're cranking out songs and beating drums and you know, doing really loud chants. So it's, as I said, they provide a lot of the great atmosphere that we've come to expect, in European type situations. So that's why, the fact that TFC has gone and suspended, one of their leading supporter groups, it's a big deal.
I would think too, the fact that it happens, or maybe I'm wrong here, John, but the fact that it happens ahead of a match against, the Montreal Impact, the rival, that's almost like even reinforcing the message, isn't it? Because you know the inebriati would love to be at that match.
Sure, absolutely. We have to remember this took place in July, and there was a police investigation by Ottawa. So, you know, normally stuff like this takes time, and there was obviously an internal investigation by TFC. So it took some time, but I certainly don't think TFC dragged their feet. The timing is, it is what it is. So, I don't doubt for a minute that they would love to be, the inebriati would love to be at the Montreal game just because it's their biggest rival and whatnot. But circumstances, that's the way it worked out, I guess.
Is this a chance for the Impact to pretty much drive a stake through the heart of the TFC's postseason chances?
I think so. Yeah, I think this is, it's not a must-win in the sense that, for TFC, in the sense that if they lose, it officially eliminates them. But, I think if they lose this game, then they're done. Because then they'll potentially be 12 points out of a playoff spot with 9 games left. And I think just losing to your biggest rivals who, a season ago, the roles were reversed. It was Montreal who was on the outside looking in, and Toronto was flying high. And, TFC dented their playoff hopes. So I think they have to win this. And failure to take 3 points, I just don't see how they recover from this. I just think from a points perspective, they would drop them back too far back, and I just think psychologically it would be a massive blow for the club.
What will the keys be in this match?
I think, it's an unoriginal point, and I made it before, but I think their best players have to be their best players. I think Sebastian Giovinco has to score goals, and he has to be his... I think he's been really creative as a playmaker this year, and I think he has to continue to be that. I think Drew Moore and Chris Mavinga has to sort of quarterback that defense and give nothing away. I think Michael Bradley has to hold things together in midfield. I think Jonathan Osorio has to continue to be the best player for TFC and just sort of, run at players and really be an attacking dynamic force. And I think they have to play mistake-free. I mean, I think if they can get a lead, if they can play, get out ahead, and that might force Montreal to open up, and then I think that's potentially the Toronto's advantage. If Toronto goes down and they have to play catch-up again, then, for me, I think there's concern there because, I just think it's the last thing they need right now. They're just, I think they're mentally frail, and I think they have to play this game from a position of strength. So if they can get, a goal or even 2 goals up, then I think that's massive for them.
What do you make of the Jozy Altidore and transfer rumors involving him and attracting some European interest? And I guess the European transfer window closes soon, does it not?
Yeah, so it's closed in most nations. I think France is like the last major one that's still open. Mm-hmm. It doesn't surprise me that teams are interested in him. I think he's a quality player, and so naturally teams would be interested in him. But speaking to Greg Vanney the other day, he said that as far as he knew, no club is contacted TFC about making a formal offer for him. So, and Jozy, you take this for what it's worth, but he's really settled here. I mean, he really has a strong feeling for the city. I think he's got a good situation here. I think he's always said that he's kind of grown up a little bit since coming to Toronto, and the city has really embraced him, and he's kind of grown up. He said kind of become a better man since coming here. So mm-hmm. I think it would take a hell of a lot for him to leave. I wouldn't rule it out entirely. I mean, maybe someday he will leave, but I think for right now, I find it very hard to believe that he'd be leaving TFC.
John, who to your mind would be irreplaceable in this team? Is there such a thing as an irreplaceable player?
I don't know that there is. I think there isn't one sort of player that you take them away from the team and you say, oh, wow, well, how can they ever possibly come back from this? I think, there's strength and depth, and they certainly have depth, although you wouldn't know it necessarily this year by the way they're playing. But, I think it's the team's greatest strength has always been its sort of depth and its balance and its strength in every position. You look at it on paper, and, they have quality players at every position and backup options at every position. So, I don't think if you were to take away one player from this team, I don't think anyone is irreplaceable.
We did find out, by the way, a couple of days ago that Christine Sinclair is going to is back with the Canadian, not back with the Canadian women's team. She, I don't know if she ever really left, but what do you think the future holds for her eventually?
I think she's going to keep playing until her legs drop off. She's just that type of person. She's just so passionate about the sport and representing her country. And I could see her easily going another couple of years. So she was on. I don't know, it was your show or maybe it was the starting lineup last week. And she was talking about, she was looking for 2020 Tokyo, the Olympics in Japan. So I figure she's got at least another 2 years in her. And then once that sort of ends, once her playing career happens, I don't know. She hasn't really talked about what she's going to do after, her playing career winds down. I wonder if coaching would be something she'd want to do. But I don't know. Maybe she just wants to spend time with her family and kind of rest and relax because she's had a remarkable career, but there's been a lot of travel and a lot of ups and downs. So she certainly deserves a break once all this is done.
Another kind of fascinating story that kind of slipped under the radar a bit. At least I find it fascinating. La Liga planning to play matches in the United States, and not exhibition matches, but league matches in the United States, which makes an awful lot of sense. for a lot of ways. But apparently it's players, which you'd think they would be stakeholders in this. The players aren't really happy with the idea. Why haven't we seen more? Why haven't we seen teams play league matches in North America? I mean, the NFL goes over to England. We know that, and those matches are successful. Why haven't we seen soccer leagues play league matches in North America?
I think teams are really reticent and sort of they just don't like the idea because, you know, they lose a home game, right? The soccer league, European season is only 36, 38 games long, depending on, you know, the league. So you only have a certain amount of home dates. So, you know, you're talking about losing a potential home date. You're talking about, you know, traveling across the ocean during the course of the season, which, you know, it's fine when you're doing it during the summer because nothing's really on the line. But then, you know, you're talking about a competitive game, you know, losing a week out of your life for travel and all the headaches that goes on with it for a competitive game during the season. So I just think, and more than anything else, I just think it's new, right? I think people are just sort of opposed to anything that breaks from tradition. God knows soccer is probably more than any other sport based on tradition. And I think it just breaks from the norm. And any sort of new kind of idea that gets introduced, I think a lot of people just look at it with a jaundiced eye and aren't immediately friendly to the idea for whatever reason, for good or bad.
I think it makes so much sense. First, like, I mean, in some ways, it really doesn't make sense for the Premiership because they've got such a foothold in North America, and they've got that right. 6-year deal with NBC, and I think they get almost $1 billion for it. But it does make sense for a league like the Spanish league, doesn't it? Which probably, sure. I mean, John, if you were in terms of North America, in terms of viewing, in terms of interest, and I know it can be hard to sort of quantify this, but I would think that it would probably be behind the Premiership, Serie A, and MLS.
I think it would certainly be behind the Premier League. It's probably behind MLS. I mean, Serie A, it's either them or La Liga, I would think. But
okay,
yeah, I'm with you. I think from a La Liga's perspective, I could certainly understand why they want to do it. They're obviously trying to up their brand globally, and just sort of increase their global footprint. So from the league's perspective, I totally understand why they want to do it. And the fact that the EPL has been so dead set against it, I mean, this allows them to be the first one in, so to speak. So, sure. Again, fully understand why the Spanish league would want to do it. But I can understand also why, you know, the Spanish players wouldn't be so big on it. And the fact that from all the reporting I've heard, it sounds like, you know, the Spanish league didn't consult the actual players or teams or the players' union with this. So, that was probably a bit of a mess step on their part. Had they consulted with him and got on board, then I think that certainly would have strengthened their case to actually do this. Now that seems to be, even though they signed the deal, it seems like, you know, this whole sort of, are there actually going to be La Liga games played in the U.S. is very much up in the air.